Welcome back to the gospel. We have a great show in store for you today. It feels like it's been so long since we talked to you guys. Like, I'm not used to this one show a week thing. It just doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel the same. We'll be back to multiple shows a week here pretty soon. But BK, holla at the people, my guy.
Hey, y'all.
It's about to be interesting these next few weeks as far as basketball is concerned, both NBA and the tournaments coming up. There's really no bad time to talk about football, so there's that. And then there'll be a couple of things out there for your entertainment purposes only. We'll kind of get to a little bit later. But we're going to start you out with a good word for the week. But I would first like to remind you that we are now on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, on YouTube at The Gospel STP. BK, good word for the week. What's up first?
Sure. So no surprise starting the NFL. The NFL plans on using Hawkeye virtual electronic system to measure first downs in 2025. How do you feel about that? Good move, expected, or a big surprise?
It's unexpected, but at the same time, I'm glad that they're doing it. I will say that I need you to have a crew available at all times, because the last thing that I would want is for technology to go awry and then we're in the middle of a game trying to figure out, you know, whether it's the first down or how are we going to figure out if it's the first down, if this, you know, device isn't operating correctly. But I mean, it's time. Like, why are we fiddling around with this? Where did it actually land when you can get it 100% correct? Now, I know you're kind of familiar with the technology itself. I want to say, isn't it what they use in tennis?
Yes.
So the only thing that I can see being different is you may have 400-300-pound bodies on top of the ball versus it just being the ball and looking at that in comparison to a white line. So I don't know if there are blind spots or if there's a way for the device to just say, hey, based on this microchip that's in the ball, the furthest tip of the ball reached at this point. Like, what? Because you're still flying blind, even though you're using the machine, if you can't tell where it is elsewhere. I mean, if it can't do that, I would suggest someone come up with that. Maybe I need to patent it before I make that suggestion, but can't be that difficult to put some kind of a chip on the ball where it shows exactly where the ball is on the field.
No, I think that makes perfect sense. And yeah, I mean, tennis uses it. I think it's a terrific setup for tennis. It's very easy. It takes out all the guesswork. It's automatically right all the time. And what I do like about this, where I'm even more excited about it, is from a bigger picture, I think it's going to open the window to eliminating one of my pet peeves, which is how awful replay is.
Yeah.
Because now you can use Hawkeye at the goal line, the sidelines. Was it a catch? Was it not? Like, you can open this up with Hawkeye, especially if you put a chip in the ball or you put chips on the sideline. You can really open this up to the goal line. You can make this really, really simple, and it'll eliminate all the nonsense we get with the replay booth. Because the general message has always been, if you have the technology to get it right, why wouldn't you use it? But then we have the replay official booths who have a chance to slow it down and speed it up and do everything they can, and they still screw it up. So it's like, I would rather take it out of human element. Mm-hmm. And just let the system do it. Because in tennis, you don't have these problems. And I know a lot of people don't care about tennis. I understand. But if they got it right, why can we not get it right in the sports that people have not only vested interest in, both financially, but and in terms of fandom?
And the other thing is, you can still have the same amount of officials and refs and all that kind of good stuff. It allows them to look at other things. So maybe this implementation can actually make other things better because I can now focus, you know, on the play instead of where the ball ends up. Like maybe the line judge is now looking at something else. I don't know what else it'll be. They'll figure it out. But something that they couldn't take the time to look at before or didn't have the best angles or the best approach before may be able to open that up because they have less responsibilities because that's one less thing they have to do. So do you see any drawbacks to it? Potentially.
I mean, I think the one drawback is, you know, potentially this could either in the short term or in the future eliminate officials' jobs like sideline people, that kind of thing. You know, because if we have the technology that can get it right without having the human element on the field, then we don't need to pay them to do it and just the electronic device does it. So I think, you know, it's kind of like why the umpires in baseball have been a little reluctant to let the umpire at home plate lose balls and strikes. Although my solution to that is just have him relay the call, right? The machine makes the call ball or strike and he just verbally says ball or strike. You know, so, but that would be the one drawback, I think.
I can see that. I can see that. Tom Brady is actively pursuing current Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford. Do you think he's going to succeed in his quest?
I think it wouldn't surprise me if he does. And I say that because, you know, Brady has cachet and he'll know exactly how to sell an aging quarterback the opportunities that are available.
Agreed.
But the other thing is, I mean, when the Rams literally told Stafford's agent, hey, find a deal that's best for you, that doesn't seem like they're rolling out the red carpet. So, you know, and we'll talk about a potential Stafford replacement later in the program. But I do think that it would make sense from both sides for him to consider it. How do you feel?
I like it. The selling point or the salesman, to your point, would be, I understand where you are in your career. I understand how you want to end your career. Ride it out with me and, you know, we'll make whatever happen. I think it works out for LA because in their timeline, in their mind's eye, they don't want to necessarily build a team. They want to create a team. And creating a team takes a lot less time than building a team. You normally build a team through years in the draft and kind of bringing up your young guys and making sure that they become the part of the program that you foresaw. Creating a team, you can pull in a few key pieces and make some huge changes as far as win-loss is concerned fairly quickly. My thought was, why not kill two birds with one stone? Get Stafford and Kupp. They want to get rid of both of them. You need a number one wide receiver and you need a quarterback. And maybe Kupp, along with Tom Brady, is what makes Stafford comfortable enough to sign. And Stafford, along with Tom Brady, is what make Kupp willing to sign. But they could trade for both of them and they probably would only have to give up. They could probably get both of them for a third round pick right now.
I actually really like that idea because it's a security blanket for Stafford. And the other part is, you know, Brady can sell it as, hey, I know what it's like to be successful late in my career. I want that for you. We'll bring along your buddy and he'll be Julian Edelman 2.0 or Wes Welker, however you want to term Kupp, but pretty much very similar type players.
Yeah.
I think it makes perfect sense. And the Raiders have plenty of ability to make that happen. So be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Won't take too long into the new NFL year for a lot of those big dominoes to fall.
So I have to tell you, Zay, and I smiled when I put this on the docket today, because this is a BK I told you so not because you disagreed, but there are many out there who probably, when I kept saying this week after week for month after month, that, you know, what does he know that the rest of us don't know? Well, this is an I told you so, and here's the story. Stark, former quarterback, Quinn Ewers, played through a torn oblique injury for 12 games during the 2024 season, which clearly impacted the team and his ability to do things and why they struggled so much and played so many tight games. Are you surprised that this came out and that it was as bad as it was, or do you just trust what I said and just knew that that was an issue?
I am surprised that it came out. It also leads me to ask the question of how much better is Ewers than Arch Manning if you're willing to put him out there with this injury for multiple weeks? I don't know enough about the injury to know whether or not it's just a pain tolerance type of thing or if you can make it worse by playing with it. But the fact that they felt more comfortable in Texas putting him out there hurt than they felt put Arch Manning out there healthy, that, I don't know, that's kind of telling to me.
Agreed.
And then my question becomes, is there some kind of rule against this? Like, I know they're getting paid now, but they're still students. Like, should there not been some type of a report that indicated that he had this injury and that, you know, are there waivers signed? Like, what goes on in this situation when it comes out that, yeah, we knew that he wasn't right and we put him out there anyway? Like, I don't know how to exactly, I'm still digesting this because I don't even know which angle is the most important angle of this particular topic, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think your point, there's a lot of things to consider, and not in any particular order, but, you know, one, that to what you said, Ewers playing healthy, playing injured, is an indictment and very telling that you'd rather play an injured, compromised Ewers than play a healthy Arch Manning. Like, that says, speaks volumes. The other, like, there must be some big drop-off that you're willing to do that. The second thing is how much better would Ewers have played if had he been healthy? See, how long was he, like, we know he was hurt for 12 games, which is pretty much almost the whole season, right? And he did miss some time, but not a lot, which also means he rushed back sooner than he probably should have, given the extensive injury. And I don't know if it's something where you can, I don't know medically, is it something you can treat? Is it a pain tolerance thing? Did he wear some kind of flak jacket? Did he get an injection? Like, you know, what was done to help treat it or make it more comfortable for him? But, you know, I will say this, it speaks volumes for his toughness that in his character that he was willing to play, as hurt as he was, the whole season. There are many people who would have taken the money and sat on the bench. So that, I think, speaks as a positive light for him. As far as the rules, you know, the NFL, you have to declare your injury report and you have to let people know and keep them updated. And there's a process to that where there's, you know, transparency. I don't think that exists in college football. You can get away with just saying nothing. I'm amazed that they were able to keep this quiet. In the era of social media and where no one can keep their mouth shut, I can't believe this wasn't something that was widely discussed almost right immediately.
Agreed, for sure.
But last but not least, a little NBA action. The two hottest teams in the NBA. One, of course, the Eastern Conference leading Cleveland Cavs. No surprise there, given that they've pretty much been atop of the standings most of the year. But the Detroit Pistons also are on an 8-game winning streak. See, I got to ask, you're our basketball resident expert here. How surprised are you that the Pistons, under former Cavs coach Bickerstaff, 8 in a row. They're only a game, I think, out of the 4 seed in the East. The surging Pistons, what you got? They haven't had this kind of winning streak since 2007 and 2008.
Not surprised at all. What do we say, BK? Bickerstaff is the type of coach that can go to a team that isn't capable of winning and make them a winning team. And then the GM will fire them because he can't make them a championship team, and they're right there on the cusp. Bickerstaff is Moses. He will get you to the promised land. He just can't get you through.
He'll get you lost once he gets you there.
because look at what the Cavs are doing, right? And what more could you want from Bickerstaff? Why would you make this move? And now it's like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. There was a lot more that they can get out of that exact same team if the coach was different. So two things can be true. He's a great coach that can make a team that isn't very good, good. But he's not a guy that is known for making a team that's really good, great.
Right.
And that's what we have going on here. The Cavs were in a little bit of a better situation than Detroit was. But Bickerstaff did the same sort of thing there. So, I mean, we've seen this before. You just have some coaches that can create a culture, and then you have some coaches that are able to take that culture to the next level. And I really believe that you'd get similar results from Bickerstaff just about anywhere he went. You brought up her name in the last show, I believe it may have been. He's tantamount to Rick Pitino. Like, he it doesn't matter what team he has or where he goes, he's going to make that team relevant. Even if he doesn't necessarily make that team a championship team, he's going to make them relevant.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess what ultimately will happen then, Pistons fans have to hope that Kenny Atkinson gets fired and then he can take over for Detroit and get them where they need to go. Is that what we're waiting for?
2 years. 2 years. Give him 2 years.
Boy. Well, moving over to the truth and nothing but the truth. There's a lot of college football coaches that are saying recruits are more concerned, or it's more important to them about getting the NIL than where they stand on the depth chart. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll put it this way, BK. I'm not more concerned with who my coworkers are than I am about my paycheck every 2 weeks. This is a money game now. Or listen, only one team is going to win the championship. Odds are against that. But I can predetermine whether or not I come out of this situation rich. Give me my money. I'll worry about everything else later. That's what it's a job. They're getting paid to do a job. That's where we are now. So what happens is now coaches can't go to the bargaining table with the "we have the stacked roster" argument, because it's a, well, if your roster's stacked, how is that going to affect my money? Because I'm not going to get much playing time. That's no longer a selling point, is how I take this particular argument. But it is, I believe, going to make what is already exciting even more exciting in college sports, because you can literally have Cinderellas come out of nowhere. A person that would have never gone to school A, B, or C is now there because they're getting paid a handsome amount to be there. And now team A, B, and C are competing with these other teams that normally had their second and third string that would have been first string in most other places. So I honestly feel like it evens the playing field, and the people that are complaining the most are the ones that were always the haves, and now they have less. Mm-hmm. And the have-nots have more.
Yeah, I think to use one of my favorite phrases, I think this is much ado about nothing. I get why college coaches are concerned. At the end of the day, the average NFL career is 3 years. These players have a chance to make life-changing money in the college level, they're going to get paid. And
they should.
And they, right, they should. So, you know, at the end of the day, if I can make $12 million a year to go play at Pitt, why would I sit fourth string at Georgia just because they're going to make the playoffs? Like, now I know the purists are going to say, well, you should care more about winning than your paycheck. But at the end of the day, like you correctly said, it's a job now. So, and we always talk about student athletes. Well, now it's a career internship is what they should call it. And so at that point, it's like going to us at work and going, yeah, as long as you're somewhere in the stack ranking, it doesn't matter what you make, you're there. But it most definitely matters where you're at.
So I mean, we're at a point now where, and I will argue with the purists that this actually makes the sports better. What happens is you're now going to have teams that would have otherwise not been in the running. You're also going to have players that would have not been able to shine on other teams that are going to come to the forefront a whole lot quicker. Like a whole lot quicker. You're going to see a lot more players that stay in college for 4 years because what I will make as a rookie doesn't exceed what I'm making now, and I'm having a whole lot more fun. And I don't have to work the whole year. So why not? And BK, guess what else also happens? A lot more of these student athletes are actually going to have a degree because they're going to stay there for the full 4 years. And the only way you can stay there for the full 4 years is if you're making good enough grades to be able to graduate in 4 years.
Right.
So who's losing here? And it's not coming out of the school's pocketbook. They aren't like this. I can see how it's very much different. I can see how it would be aggravating to people that are used to doing it a certain way. But at the end of the day, the product on the field is now getting a piece of the pie. And that's only fair.
Well, the truth is it's only aggravating to the coaches, which is why they brought it up. For everyone else, it's a win.
Facts. For sure.
For the coaches, it's a headache.
Agreed.
Well, I mentioned, I kind of tipped this off earlier. Aaron Rodgers, you know, my favorite player to talk about, is rumored to want to play for the Rams and bring Davante Adams with him. Should the Rams make this happen? And does it really even matter?
I can see it working out for the Rams, to be honest. If they're going to do what they've been saying they're going to do, which is get rid of Stafford and Kupp, you're going to need a quarterback and a number one wide receiver. And if you put that wide receiver and that quarterback with that running game, that coach, I can see things working out well. Definitely a lot better than what went on with the Jets. That was a dumpster fire before he got there. It's a bigger dumpster fire after he's leaving. I don't see a more natural fit as long as those other moves are already made. If that doesn't happen, then I can see maybe the Steelers or something like that because they're debating whether or not they want to hang on to Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. I can also see either one of those quarterbacks going to the Rams if Rodgers doesn't go and Stafford does leave. So there's a few quarterbacks and there's even fewer jobs. We know that in a couple of situations, rookies are going to take over because that's just par for the course. So some of these guys are going to be left without having a job. So we'll have to see, you know, are you more interested in a Justin Fields who is a young guy that can hold it in the role for the next several years for a franchise? Or are you more interested in making a splash move and going with the Aaron Rodgers who is a year away from retiring, in humble opinion, and probably should retire this year? So do you kick the tires and verify that it was the Jets and not him? And maybe you strike gold. This is a move that right up the Rams' alley. Because, you know, they're a team that's more likely to create than to build. Just building on the previous example that I gave. if Rodgers isn't washed and Devontae Adams can still do what he's known to be able to do with that run game and that defense, with some of the brilliant drafting that they did last year as far as defense was concerned, they're right back in the thick of it. The NFC isn't that big of a hill to climb currently. So who would you trust more than Aaron Rodgers that's going to be readily available? Because they don't have a high enough draft pick, and I don't see them giving up capital, huge capital at least, to bring somebody in. So if you're looking at Russell, Justin, Aaron, possibly Derek Carr, there's been some rumblings that he might be a cap casualty due to what's going on down there with the Saints. Which, I mean, like, who would you prefer to have at quarterback when looking at who's going to be available to you without having to give up picks?
No, I think it makes perfect sense for the Rams. I know that this is more of a dark horse, and I know I've floated this out here before, but I really think the Niners should be in on this. He's always wanted to play there. They have a loaded team. And honestly, I just don't have faith in Purdy getting him over the hump. Like, to me, he's more of a game manager than a guy that can actually go out and win games.
And they just extended him, didn't they?
What's that?
I think they just extended Purdy.
The last I heard, they were talking about it. I didn't see the official thing, so I might be behind on that.
I'll check.
But while you're double checking that, I would, for me, I just, and whether they did do that or not, I still feel like that makes sense for them, because he would immediately improve their quarterback play. And if they're maybe losing Debo to trade and you bring in Rodgers and Adams, you kind of replace both quarterback and receiver there as well. It's a logical fit on a loaded 49ers team. But I think either the Rams or Niners would make sense. He won't go to the Saints, just because even if he goes there, they're not a team that's a contender. So he wouldn't do that. But the Rams or Niners, I'm confident he would do.
I can see that. I could definitely see that. And I would love to see if he still has it, or if we just have more excuses now that you're on a better team. Because you chose to go to the Jets. So I don't want to cry me a river about how trash they were. They were that trash when you chose to go there. You were the one that was going to be their savior. That was your narcissism that thought that you were so great that you were going to be able to turn that team around. Didn't work out so well. So,
And you know, to tie a ribbon around the last part of my question was, does it really matter? I phrased that question because the guy's won two playoff games since 2017.
Yep.
Like, we're literally in 2025. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to get all excited about a guy who can't win games anymore that matters.
But so, that's why I want him to go to a good team. Because if you still can't do it, it takes away all the excuses. It's you, sir. Go ahead and retire at this point. But the opposite is also true. If he goes there and it's a renaissance of Aaron Rodgers of old, well, maybe all you needed was an offensive line and some decent wide receivers and you were good. We'll see. But a significant portion of the Aaron Rodgers story will be told this coming year, and how people view him based on how and who he is. People are going to look at some of his latter years a little bit different than some other quarterbacks that were successful early on and then kind of didn't do very much after that. But I believe a lot of his story is still yet to be told. We'll see how that goes.
No, very true. Last but not least, in the truth, multiple colleges such as North Carolina and Nebraska have been hiring GMs to help navigate NIL, the portal, international signings, and other matters. What's your reaction to this? Do you think this is a trend where many more will follow this? Is it necessary? Have we reached a point where it's necessary? Like, where do you shake out on this?
Well, let me explain an easy litmus test, if you will, of whether or not a position is necessary. Are multiple entities, independent entities at that, willing to pay a significant amount of money for said position? Yes. And this situation is telling us that the answer to that question is a resounding yes. These people don't want to pay out money they don't have to. So if it wasn't necessary, the position wouldn't be there. But what's happened is we're now at a point where asking the coach and the assistants to navigate all of this, plus what they have to do on the field or on the court or in the game, whatever it is you have to have, whatever, you know, activity we have going on, it's too much for them to handle having all the other jobs that they have to complete. So, yeah, a general manager is exactly who you hire to figure out the money. And that's where we are now in college. Someone to figure out the money and figure out how many bodies we can get. And based on the amount of money that we have, who can we go after? How much do we want to spend on one person? It's literally becoming like the NFL in the sense of there's not a cap other than the cap that you impose on yourself. But you got to figure out who you're going after, how you're going after them, and what's the next move if you miss out on. So, yeah, they're very much necessary.
Agreed.
And that wraps up the truth and nothing but the truth. And we will now go into the top five all time of something. And this week, that something is the top five things I would like to change about the NBA. This will be interesting because I'm interested to see whether or not we had the same philosophical outlook as far as changes, or if it was more entertainment driven on one side versus the other. Or we'll see. What do you got up first, BK?
So I have to give a disclaimer.
Okay.
I recognize that I'm going to get, even my camera was taken back by what I'm about to say. So I decided to go crazy. But we all know that the ratings are way down, almost 30%. So the NBA is struggling big time as it is. And the other part of it is my suggestions are probably going to generate some hate mail, which is fine. Because you know me, I tell the truth unapologetically. And if there was a shirt that I could wear, it would say, zero something given, and I'll let you fill out the middle word for those of you at home. So with that said, my number five is we're going to move back the three-point line. I am tired of watching NBA games where we jack up 50 threes a game. Okay, this is not an all-star game. This is not a three-point shooting contest. This is not we're playing horse where you're getting paid to do this. I need you to play the game of basketball, cut, move, play defense, actually try to stop people from scoring, which they don't do until the fourth quarter, which is why the games are 142 to 134. I need you guys to move it back so that not everybody can shoot three-pointers. We need to go back to mid-range jump shots and actually taking the ball to the basket and things that are known to the game of basketball, not just walking it past half court and saying, gee, I'm going to shoot up a 40-footer today.
You're not going to like one of my answers, and that's going to be number four. We'll get to that in a second. Number five for me, too many games. I get it when everyone is chasing greatness. If you decide midstream, and this is, I say the same thing with baseball. I get it. If you decide midstream to take away games, then you're taking away people's opportunities at breaking records and things of that nature. And most athletes would prefer to have a shot at breaking a record versus it just being taken away from them and it being impossible to accomplish, which a lot of records would kind of go that route if you lessen the games. But if you want to grow the game and grow viewership, you have to understand that the NFL has the perfect mix of I have to watch it every week because it's only around but for so long. And even with the NFL at this point, around week 15, 16, people start 14, 15, 16, people start zoning out, and it's not until the playoffs that are just a couple weeks later that they kind of tune back in. And, you know, that's a great nap opportunity. You kind of fall asleep on Sunday, letting the game watch you at a certain point in the season. But I think less games would take care of a few issues. And I'll talk about a couple of those other issues on my list a little bit later. But that's number five for me. What's your number four?
So I'm going to give three and four, because my three is actually what your five was, which is cut down the schedule. I'd reduce the games from 82 to 70. That's kind of the magic number I had in mind. I know that's always going to be pushed back because it means loss of revenue for those 12 games and all the angst that you're going to get because of that. But I think it's long overdue to make that happen. But my number four is the return of physical play. I need to get, this isn't about ratings. This is about the game being played properly. Now, look, guys, I'm not trying to advocate us to go back where it's 76 to 74 and there's 7,502 fouls, okay? I'm not trying to get there. But we went from 85 to 80 games with the Knicks and the Pistons to now we're getting that at halftime sometimes. Like, and unfortunately, this is a problem with everything in America. There's no such thing as a middle ground. It's either all or nothing. We can't just make incremental changes. So we're going to go back to reducing flagrant fouls. You're allowed to hit people. You're allowed to hand check people. We're going to be physical, because I'm going to get the scoring down from 125 points a game. We're going to get it down to 100, 104, 105. If I can get a 105, 102 game, that's about what I'm trying to get. I'm not trying to watch people score, you know. I saw a score the one day earlier in the season. It was, my camera just has decided to quit today. I apologize, guys. Holy gosh. So, but I say that to say that, you know, I mean, what are we doing? Like, I shouldn't see a game that's 85 to 80 at halftime. Like, that's not basketball. That's a three-point shooting contest at the WOW. So that's my number three and four. What are your three and four?
For me, number four is a four-point line. I'll see you're backing up the three-point line, and I'll match it with getting rid of the three and making it a four because you moved it back. If you dare to shoot it, do what you do. You might get benched. Just don't know. It's going to be far enough out there that the coach is going to be looking at you like, if your name isn't Steph Curry, you better not be shooting that shot. Unless we're behind by 8 points and it's 30 seconds left and we have two possessions to get 8 points. So that's going to help out with everything that you indicated, plus giving a little bit while you're taking, if that makes sense.
No, I love it. I actually love that real quick, because it would also keep fan interest, because fans would eat up the 4-point play. Like, is it going to 4-point shot? Is it going to happen? Who's going to do it? Like, my only concern is I worry about too many fools will try to jack up fours. And, you know, and that's the only thing, like, everyone's going to try to do it.
That's on the coach. If you want to see the results. So the reason why people didn't jack up threes in the past as much is because the coach would kindly sit them on the bench and let them know that's not how we play basketball. That's how far I want the 4-point line to be a foot and a half in front of half court. Just past half, enough past half court that you can maneuver without getting a back court and still set up a shot where that line is.
So kind of like where the logo kind of ends.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm all for that.
My number three, shorter contracts to produce more movement. I think what the NBA figured out a few weeks ago is when certain teams are good, viewership is better, and that's best for all parties involved. Luka Doncic going to the Lakers just produced the most watched NBA game in regular season history. At 2.5 point 2.5 million viewers, I believe it was. So you have to make it easier for mistakes to be rectified and for new life to be given. So if I make a mistake and sign with the wrong team and now I'm stuck here for 5 years, that doesn't help me, the team, or the NBA. If I make a mistake and sign with the wrong team for 3 years, no huss, no fuss, I'll be on the open market again in 2 years because they're going to try to trade me to make sure they get something for me versus me just walking and the team getting nothing. So I believe it'll kind of make things better for big and small markets. You'll have some big name players that'll be willing to pay small market team. And I think there should be a small, actually, that's another change that I just created in my mind that isn't on my list. Honorable mention.
The safest bet in sports is Zay's honorable mention.
This just came about literally while talking. Okay. There should be a small market bump. What I mean by that is, if a small market wants to pay a superstar player more than a large market team, there should be some type of leeway where a small market team is capable of offering more than a large market. And then it's on the player to say, okay, I want to go to the large market, which will be good for the NBA, or I want to stay in the small market to see if I can bring other players to me. And if I can't do that within the next 2 years, I'm not strapped for the next 6 years. So, yeah, that's my three, my four, and my honorable mention. Back on you. What you got at number two?
Number two, while we're going back to the past, I want to return the first round series to a best of five. No more seven game series in the first round. There's an excitement about best of five. There's a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And I like the best of five format. It's also great for player safety because they're not having to play as many games. It also gets some of these uneven matchups over sooner, so there's less of that. So for all of those reasons, it makes more sense. And the tighter series could go down as all-time greats in these best of five, where every game matters versus the best of seven, where not always the every game matters. So best of five, number two. What you got?
I like it. Number two. This is sheerly for entertainment purposes. No more NBA players in the dunk contest. Either get rid of the dunk contest or the dunk contest is strictly YouTube sensation dunkers. The street dunkers will have to put on a show to be selected or elected, if you will, by all NBA All-Stars. That NBA All-Star chooses his street baller that he wants to be his dunker. And you put it together like that. And then you change people's lives who made a very exciting night. Giving an NBA player $200,000 is basically giving them his weekend play money. Some of these dudes, that's life-changing money. So you're covering a few bases. They're better at dunking, first of all. If they get hurt, well, I'm sorry, but I would rather it be you than Ja Morant or LeBron James or whomever is going to be out there attempting to dunk. I just think it just makes too much sense because right now the NBA is basically holding a man hostage in the G League just so he can come out and win the dunk contest every year because Matt McClung can't get on the team for nothing. So you're already basically taking people off the streets, and that could have been my rant. That would have been so much better than what I had planned. Anyway, go ahead, BK.
I just want to picture me dunking on my 9-foot little hoop and playing above the rim. See that? I'm gonna do it for free.
Hey, join the trampoline basketball league, BK. You still got the ups. You just need the right. You just need the right equipment underneath you. That's all.
You see me flying through the air with my tongue out.
Oh Lord!
They definitely would not be saying BK wins with that. I can assure you.
Wrap it up for us, BK. What you got, number one?
Number one, I think this is something that makes a lot of sense. A balanced lottery system. I want a situation where in order to absolutely eliminate tanking, every team gets the same. If you don't make the play-in or the playoffs, everyone has the same percentage chance of getting the number one pick.
I got a better setup for you, BK.
All right, hit me.
Honorable mention.
Number two.
Let the teams that are in the lottery have their own tournament. You win the tournament and you get the number one overall pick. You can't tank. Winning is literally what gets you the number one pick. If you're the worst, you get pick number 10. Ergo, you can't mail it in mid-season because you think you're a lottery team. Everybody fights all the way through now. And people get to watch their team a little bit longer. And if you take away some of the regular season games, you're filling in the revenue that would have been lost as well and more important games. And now you have the excitement of having the number one star in a draft going to a team that actually turned it around and may only need one guy to be a contender versus having players go to a dumpster fire that they're never going to turn around and just wasting away their youngest years there.
So I love everything about that idea except for one thing.
Okay.
You're literally asking me to watch my unwatchable Bulls more than I already have to. And that sounds like a terrible idea because they are.
Nah, your Bulls will be out in the first round of that lottery playoff. So it'll only be one extra week.
That's one extra week.
And look, this is going to be NCAA style. This isn't going to be 5-7 game series. None of that. This is NCAA style. It's winning,
survive in advance.
One and done.
Survive in advance. I love it.
Yeah. I think that would be something that everyone would be behind. And if you did it at the right part of the year, it could really be something that draws the amount of people that you kind of want to be watching in comparison to the amount that are watching now. Number one for me, no load management. If you can't show an actual, this would also, again, have to be tied with lessening the games. If you're going to lessen the amount of games that you're going to play anyway, why not just reduce the games? Let's quit playing games. How about that? No load management. Like, people aren't trying to spend the amount of money that they have to spend to come see a game, not knowing whether or not the stars are going to play. I'm about to take my family up to Charlotte here next month. Not next month, month after next, April. My youngest son, you know, he's a huge sports fan, huge basketball fan. His favorite player is Ja Morant. Well, I hope Ja Morant actually plays against Charlotte because that's the game we're going to. And depending on what's going on, I don't know. I just don't know. I just really hope he gets to see. I think he'll enjoy it regardless, but I just hope he gets to see the star player. And those are conversations you have with yourself as you make ticket purchases. And, you know, how much is gas going to cost? Putting wear and tear on the vehicle. May have to stay overnight. Like, it's a bunch of stuff that goes along with it to possibly see B players. Like, it's not right.
Great.
Which could have also been a rent, but wasn't. So, moving right along, BK. BK's best bets. What we got?
So, I got good news, and not so good news.
Okay.
What do you want to hear?
Let's hear the not so good news first. I'm one of those rip the Band-Aid off type guys.
The not so good news is I'm taking my third straight week off.
You're consistent.
However, it's all about making money. We're not going to throw our money away on random NBA games. In the college basketball season, we're just starting to get closer to the conference tournament as we're... So starting, if not next week, for sure in 2 weeks, you'll get so many plays that you won't know what to do with them, I assure you. But be patient, trust the process, count all of our winnings, and move along. But the two good news... So good news number one is there'll be plenty of plays moving forward. So don't worry. Fear not. Number two, I'm going to do something that I've never done on this portion of the show.
Okay.
I'm going to give you, the congregation, and this is also going to get posted on our Facebook page. We're going to do a little poll. In men's basketball, if I were to give you the Houston Cougars or the Duke Blue Devils to win the national title this year, or the field, who do you have? Houston, Duke, or the field?
The field. I'm going with, just because in college basketball, in a one and done environment, that is literally the spot where the field normally comes through. It's just one of those sports.
In women's, so I don't want to get any hate mail that I'm neglecting the female, the ladies, okay? If I'm going to make it a little bit harder, I'm going to give you South Carolina to win the title and repeat, or the field. Who do you got?
The field, easily. I think UConn can beat them. I think UCLA can beat them again. I think Notre Dame has a shot. I think Texas has a shot. You can't fix not having a post presence during the season. And that's their biggest skeleton in the closet, which is not to say that I don't think that they can win. But if you're asking me them or the field this year, especially, give me the field.
Yeah, I agree. In both situations, I love the field. A team in the men's that came to mind is Auburn. Auburn's really good. Yeah. Alabama's another team that's really good. So both of them kind of came to mind there. I think I said this in a show a week or two ago. They all kind of run together, so my apologies for that. But I think there's six teams that can win, you know, the women's college title in no particular order. UConn can win it. Carolina can win it. Notre Dame can win it. LSU can win it. USC can win it. And UCLA can win it. I think all six of those teams have a great shot to win it. And look, this Carolina team is not the dominant team of last year or other years. This team, look, they're really, really damn good. I don't want anyone to say otherwise, but this team's also beatable. And that's not something we're used to say. You don't lose by 30 at home and not say that you're not beatable. So they're beatable. And that's makes it interesting.
100% agree. And now it's time for the Can't Miss Weekly Rants. I'll go ahead and kick us off this week, BK.
All right.
This will be a pretty short one. And this is more of a I don't understand moment. Okay? I don't understand the concept of fans judging each other based on their reason for liking or not liking a team. It's fanatical. It's probably not going to make sense. And it doesn't have to make sense to you for it to make sense to the person that made the decision. But why does it matter so much to you if a person is a bandwagon fan? Why does it matter so much to you if a person likes a team that's umpteen miles away from where they live? Like, where do we come up with these criteria that, well, because I like the team that's in the place where I was born, that makes me a real fan? Like, what? What are you talking? That just means that you jumped on the bandwagon early. You didn't even make a decision. The decision was made for you. There's some, how will I say, schools of thoughts as it pertains to that stuff that just don't make sense. Whether you jumped on the bandwagon or whether you were born a fan of the team, there's no reward for how you got on the bus that you're riding on. Just enjoy the ride. And that's all I got, BK.
So I want everyone to take a look. Look at what color I'm wearing.
Is that Duke blue?
No. I'm sorry. No. We're wearing Carolina blue. And you're wondering, why is BK wearing Carolina blue? Well, my favorite college basketball team since I was 6 years old was North Carolina. And love the baby blue, the Carolina blue, always, always, always my favorite. So here it is. Why am I talking about North Carolina? No, I'm not going to give you some soliloquy about why Hubert Davis should not have been extended. Instead, I'm going to plead and demand that North Carolina makes March Madness this year. For those of you who don't know, depending on what bracket you look at and bracketology and all those things, some have North Carolina as the last team in, some have them as the first team out or second team out. They're very close to being in the tournament right now. And I understand that everything in life revolves around money and politics, and specifically money. So make no mistake, they're a blue blood. I'm pretty sure the committee is going to find some way to get them in. So I'm probably wasting my breath. But you know me, I don't like to take any chances, so we're going to double down. I understand that North Carolina is 1-10 in quad one games. I understand their net rating is in the mid-40s. They're 11-6 in ACC play. They're a huge favorite at home this weekend against Miami. They're going to be a favorite on the road in Blacksburg against Va Tech. Assuming they hold serve, and there's a very good probability that they will, they're 13-6 in conference play and 20-11 overall. And that leads to their showdown at home to close the season against the four-letter D word, a.k.a. known Duke. You know it's a four-letter word. It doesn't surprise you. If they win that game, they're going to be in regardless, so this is all moot. But here's my thing. I understand stats are like bikinis. They show a lot, but not everything. At the end of the day, Carolina is deserving of being in the tournament. Why? Because they do the things that we ask people to do. They played a demanding schedule. They played Kansas when they were number one. They played Alabama, who's in the top four. They played Auburn. They played Duke on the road, which is part of conference play. I'm saying this because it'd be different if they played a cupcake non-conference schedule. But if you're playing all these tough teams in non-conference play, and yeah, I know that in a perfect world, it's who did you play and who did you beat. They're failing on the who did you beat part, but they're 11-6 in conference play. They played a brutal schedule. They're not the same team they were earlier in the season. They've gotten better as the season's gotten along, which is what we asked. How are you playing down the stretch? They've won four in a row in 5 of 6, and three of them by double digits. Please put this team in. I don't want to watch SMU or some other garbage team that's on the bubble that has no business being there. Sorry to you SMU fans. Oh, and by the way, when SMU played North Carolina early and they weren't even playing well, Carolina waxed them. So what do we do? And that is this week's rant.
And that wraps up this week's show. Again, we'll be back to multiple shows before you know it. Make sure that you follow and or subscribe so that you get the show as soon as it comes out via notification. And you'll be ahead of the game. We'll be back to giving you our fantasy opinions, which those of you that tuned in on last year, I can't wait to hear the victory stories because we gave you so much. I mean, I can't even begin to name the players that we went over that were players that weren't focused on that would have rounded out your teams and made championship squads. So we will be doing the same thing again this coming year for this evening. We are out, and remember, good people, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Later, y'all.
We out.